Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Today, we're doing a post-Christmas story show. Thank you for joining us. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson.
Well, hi, Susan. It's good to be back and be well enough to get out of the house. I've been ill for a couple of weeks.
Yes, we've all missed you. I know you often serve as a lay pastor in a little church near Story City. Were you able to be there for the Christmas service?
Well, actually, my home church is St. Petri Lutheran in Story City. And the church that I serve is in Stratford. It's a United Brethren church. And they get along without me in December because I have to be head usher at St. Petri for all the special Christmas services and ring the bell and all this sort of thing. So, yes, I've been working as a head usher for December.
Well, you didn't need your voice, right?
No, my voice was questionable. It still is.
Well, we're glad to have you back. So besides ringing bells and ushering, what did you do for Christmas?
Well, I have nieces in the area, and I've got friends. I've spent several dinners here and there. I'm like Blanche, the Tennessee Williams character. I depend on the kindness of strangers, you know.
And relatives.
And relatives. Now, what about you, Susan? Tell us about your Christmas.
Well, nothing very unusual, but I have been out of it, and everywhere I go, people ask me that question. What did you do for Christmas? As I thought about what will bring our listeners today, I recalled a program from a past Christmas when a lot of our staff told stories based on the question, what was your most memorable Christmas?
Well, what was your most memorable Christmas, Susan?
In recent years, they all sort of blur together ever since we came to Ames and the children were small. But most of our family Christmases had something to do with snow. I did talk to a couple of people on Saturday who were picking up family members at the airport on Christmas Eve. That reminded me of the year my son from California flew to Kansas City. The airfares were cheaper to Kansas City, and it snowed the whole drive between Kansas City and Ames. So arriving, always a little bit of a suspense, and when you walk in the door, people are always extra super glad to see you. Snow must have been a big thing on the farm in Iowa when you were growing up. Is that right, Paul?
Oh, yeah. We always had snow, and we had lutefisken lefse. That's a Norwegian tradition. And I never learned to eat that. Mom always had lutefisken lefse, and she cooked a wonderful beef roast for us Americans. So that was our Christmas Eve, along with Christmas Eve services at the Lutheran church. So many times in your memory, it all melds together. Every Christmas Eve you ever lived through was snowy and cold.
Well, I think maybe this is the place, before we start on the most memorable Christmases, to tell about this Christmas because it introduces a story from KHOI. It is Paul Nelson's story. Some of our listeners might have heard it because it was played last week. It was about a cat and a Christmas tree. But in our family, we had our usual Christmas dinner, which actually is a Scandinavian dinner. We came directly to Ames from Stockholm and learned there about a Yule board. And ever since, that's what we've eaten on Christmas Eve. But of course, as I said before, they sort of blur together. You boil the Christmas ham, you make the red cabbage, you get some pickled herring. I never pickled it myself. Limpa bread and pepperkaka and so forth. But this Christmas, my grown-up granddaughter was there with her cat, Miss Prim. And Miss Prim had an adventure sometime before Christmas morning. And her adventure involved bouncing off the walls in the basement. She was just like she'd been shot out of a cannon, but she was bouncing from one wall to the other wall, and finally she broke through a door of a china cabinet. She didn't get cut, but she broke the door. And my granddaughter was terribly worried. And Miss Prim was a little nervous, too. And I said, oh, that reminds me of Paul Nelson's story about the cat in the Christmas tree. And I couldn't tell it because I couldn't remember it. So I think it would be a good story to start with.
Oh, Christmas memories. Paul Nelson here, and I came up here to Ames in 1971 from Arkansas. Spent my childhood in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and one Christmas I remember because of something that happened involving a couple of animals. I was about 10 years old, and Christmas morning came, and I was very excited because, among other things, I had a brand new bicycle under the Christmas tree. So I came down the hall, entered the living room, and my parents were there. We gathered around and started opening presents and so forth. And I looked over and noticed that our Siamese cat had all of a sudden grown a huge tail and was looking very intently at the Christmas tree. And looked over at the Christmas tree, and I could see a little bit of movement back there. The cat kind of slunk around to the side, tail growing bigger, if that's possible. The Siamese cat is relatively short-haired, but this tail was as big around as a raccoon's tail at this point. And I saw a little bit of movement back there, and all of a sudden, a huge black snake emerged from the back of the Christmas tree and started gliding across the floor toward the hall. Its head was held high, about 6 inches off the floor, looked like a cobra, and that cat followed that snake out into the hall, and we heard a scuffle. We did manage to corral the snake and put it outside, but the cat walked around the house the rest of that day with a huge tail, looking in every corner, trying to figure out what in the world had just happened. We never could figure out where that snake got in the house. But black snakes are non-venomous, and they're not uncommon in that part of Arkansas. Oh, the bike was very nice, by the way. It was a nice new Schwinn. So, how's that for a Christmas? Yep, surprising, a Christmas surprise.
You can probably guess why I needed this story to finish Miss Prim's. We wondered if something like a snake could have scared her so she went crazy. We watched to see if her tail was extra full. Then Emma called a friend's father, who was a vet, and he said it sounded like a seizure. So Emma went online, where she saw other cats having similar episodes to what Miss Prim had. Fortunately, I can finish the story with a happy ending. They took her to the vet on Tuesday, and he gave her some tests. He said there was nothing that they could treat, that they should just watch her in case she had another episode. It looks like she's going to be okay. So that was the happy ending. But as I mentioned, the stories that we had when our children were growing up always involved snow. And to continue the snow theme, let's start our series on what was your most memorable Christmas with Pat Schlarbaum's sled story. And after that, we'll hear from many voices that you'll recognize from KHOI. At the end of the show, Ursula Rudenberg will join us to tell us about a new program KHOI is offering called Soundscapes.
Oh, let's go back to a homemade toboggan. My grandpa came from Idaho to make for us boys. It was a piece of corrugated tin with the front part rolled up. We had tried taking a hood off of 37 Ford and turning that into a sled, but we really got to thinking that the tin would make it more like a toboggan in a conventional manner. We provided the tin, and my grandpa came and he would make things. He was a farmer. When he would come to Iowa, he'd make us things. That was his role. He had the expertise to tap that front end over to make it curved and then gave it some reinforcement with some metal bands. And it was a true gift for a bunch of boys that wanted to sled down the hill outside our farmstead. And we received an ice storm on Christmas Eve. And the next day, it was just ice on top of snow. So it was like lightning as far as momentum. This piece of tin with a rolled up front became a toboggan from the galactic area. But this thing had a certain rumble to it. It was like somewhat like a locomotive. It would, as you rumbled down, it was fast. It would go airborne over the terracing. I mean, you had to bail off to keep it from smashing into the fence, but we would take it one ride after another, and as soon as you were done with one, you would think, okay, that was the last one. And by the time you made it to the top of the hill, you were ready to go down and do it again. And it just was repeated enjoyment, the most crystalline Christmas morning I can ever recall, on a hillside in southern Iowa by the Weldon River. And I think that toboggan is still a part of that farmstead in southern Iowa. I mean, it was classic. We weren't going to wear it out.
And now we have a collection of the stories from Most Memorable Christmases. We'll hear from Roger Berger, Cynthia McClure, Paul Hertz, Rick Morrison, Merrill Hodge, David Slade, and Duffy Lore.
One of the most memorable Christmases that I ever experienced was when I was about 13 years old. Without much warning, my mom and I moved to Canyon City, Colorado, which was kind of a glamorous location. It has the Royal Gorge. It's a resort town. And we bought a motel. Well, she bought a motel. And my dad continued to work at his regular job in Hastings, Nebraska. So he did come to Colorado for Christmas. And the three of us went out from the motel, drove out into the National Forest with a little handsaw. And we looked around the National Forest, and I'm thinking this was completely legal, but anyway, it was open space. There was nobody worried about it. And we looked around and found a little tree about 3 feet tall. And I was like 13 years old, and I got to be the major decision maker in picking out the tree and then help saw it down. So we found it and cut it, and it was just back to nature. You know, so much of life now is all fabricated and organized, and this was more like the Wild West. We cut a tree out of the ground and took it home and decorated it, and that was a very joyous, memorable experience. A little sidelight, I had lost my little billfold, and I was only 13, so I didn't have a lot of valuables like credit cards, but my folks seemed to have found it somehow, and it showed up under the tree on Christmas Eve. That was a little, like, frosting on the cake to get my billfold back. But as long as I'm mentioning Christmas trees, we now have a fiber optics Christmas tree. It's there right now in our house, and it requires no decorations. It's so sweet. The little color wheel underneath is hidden, but it makes the needles, like, come to life in color, and the colors are constantly changing, and I do love that. But the memory of that little kind of a scrawny tree, but it was charming and it was natural. It smelled great. The tree we have in our living room now doesn't have any smell.
Thank you. of the best Christmases that I remember growing up was when I woke up and all of us kids had bicycles waiting for us. I got my very first bicycle, you know, and my dad, he had that look like he was so happy. He hid this from us. And I'm the kind of kid that will check under the bed and all the drawers and like sneak a look at the presents, just surprising the kids in the morning, passing that on. My kids woke up Christmas morning with one giant present. And my son is a few years older than my daughter, and he looked at her and he goes, "No matter what it is, I get to use it first." And he's thinking it's like some kind of go-kart. I mean, it was a huge present. And then they open up this one giant present, and then in the center it's partitioned. So all the things that he ever asked for was on his side, and all of her stuff was on hers. And they were all individually wrapped, so it was like a giant gift. When the kids got older, I had scavenger hunt Christmases where I would make them answer questions to find out where their present was. I'd do a hide it like an Easter egg. They hated it, you know. And I just was trying to create a different memory, you know, add some different traditions. It did create a memory, not a happy memory on their part. These were preteens and teens that were like, "Give me my stuff now. I do not want to work for this." So putting two holidays together, like the Easter egg hunt and the Christmas holiday, not a good idea. Not, it's funny to think about it now, but not a good idea. Preteens are very vengeful. And they are, it created some hurt feelings on their part. And it's okay to want. It's okay to want, you know, because you also want for other people. I remember wanting for other people too. My name is Cynthia McClure, and I was, my religious background is interesting. My mother is a Baptist. My father was Catholic. I was baptized Catholic, but we have gone to different denominations and different churches. And as I grew up and got older, I converted to Islam, which I think freaked a lot of people out. And currently, I don't consider myself super religious. I just am trying to keep the intention of doing well and doing right by myself and others. I hope that KHY makes your life a little brighter. And that what we're doing here, what we're trying to achieve here, is creating a space for you to understand yourself in a bigger way. Because this isn't just us and our agenda. It's also the community and you. So my wish for you is that you don't sell yourself short throughout the new year. And come and see what we're doing here at KHOI.
Mr. Santa Claus, remember me. Brothers and sisters, I have only three. There's Jamie and Clara and
when I was in late elementary or early middle school in the mid-90s, on Christmas Day, I happened to notice this bike out in the driveway. My mom and I brought it in, and it wasn't from her. It wasn't from anyone we were expecting a gift from, but it was, in fact, from our neighbors. If you remember the Pepsi points, they had this whole promotional thing going on with various prizes if you accumulated so many. I think it was turning in probably UPC codes from the boxes, the 12 packs or whatever of Pepsi. This was the bike that you got upon accumulation of however many hundred or thousand points. And our neighbor, his job was garbage collector. And he went around every day just picking up people's trash. And he had accumulated all these thrown out boxes of Pepsi and saved the codes from them and used that to get a bike and then given it to me on Christmas, just left it in the driveway. Oh, it was great. Definitely surprised. Yeah. My name's Paul Hertz, and I'm from a mainline, more liberal Christian background, Methodist and Presbyterian. Merry Christmas to everyone out there listening, and have a safe and happy new year.
All right, this is a story about Merle. When I lived uptown, Auden, Illinois, right across the bridge from St. Louis, Missouri. Guess I was about 7 years old, I would guess. Didn't have a lot of great Christmases, but I did have one that was pretty good. I wanted a pair of moon boots. We don't get as much snow back home as you guys get up here, but we do get some snow. And I remember some of the kids was wearing these funky looking boots, and they had like big sole bottoms, real thick, and they were really insulated well, and they had the Velcro strap on the side. And I wanted a pair of those boots really bad. And also, I wanted a boom box. You know, this is back when hip hop was really going, and they came out with the double cassette boombox, and where you could dub tapes. You could like get a cassette tape and play it, and then get a blank cassette tape and put on the other side and record, you know, and, you know, make a mixtape, you know, different songs, you know. And I thought that was super cool. And my mom was a single parent, and she didn't have a lot of money. I lived in the projects, but my father always got me something on Christmas too. But this particular Christmas, my mom really put some effort in getting me some nice things. I think they did pretty good that year in school, so she went that extra mile to look out for me and got me that double cassette thing and those moon boots. I put those moon boots on with my pajamas and went outside in the snow and was stumping around and making big footprints. So that's my little Christmas story. That's probably the best memory of a childhood Christmas that I think I can think of. My name is Merle. I do a radio show here called Merle on the Move, and I'm a Christian. Merry Christmas from Merle on the Move at KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames, Iowa.
Well, I remember one Christmas, this is back in the 80s, and I must have been around 8 years old. I was kind of like a radio nerd back then, too, in technology. And I always wanted the walkie-talkie because I thought it'd be kind of cool to have this kind of communication with friends, kind of have this play time with friends and use the two-way technology. So I think one Thanksgiving, we found a wishbone, I think, and we let it dry out. And I guess my dad and I, we pulled it apart and... You know, if I were to get the bigger piece, I would get my wish. And so what happened was I ended up with the bigger piece. And, you know, just waited for one Christmas. And I opened up a package, and there was it was a very high quality walkie-talkie. Pretty expensive, actually. So I got my wish. It was a very exciting moment to have that experience. And it's kind of like a magical childhood experience. So... You know, now that I think about it now, since I'm growing up more and I understand things more, it's more of how much my parents really did care for me, you know, when I was a kid. And even now, when you're a kid, you think of more kind of like Santa experience. And when you grow up, you realize how truly your parents cared for you. So you kind of appreciate them more for giving you this gift that you've always wanted. So I would definitely define it as a experience of appreciation, more of a connection. I'm Rick Morrison, and I am a spiritual person, and I wish all the listeners a very meaningful holiday and a close bonding with their family and friends through the holidays.
Thank you. I think my most memorable Christmas is from when I was a child during World War II, and I think I was four. My father was overseas in what I learned later, the Pacific. My mother had very, very supportive friends, among them an older couple whom we knew as a grandma and a grandpa, and they had no children of their own. And we learned that Christmas how much they loved us and how much of a grandma and grandpa they were. Our family tradition was to let Santa Claus put the tree up. So when we children went to bed, there was no tree. We did leave cookies and milk for Santa Claus. And little did we know that half the neighborhood came in and helped our mother decorate that tree. And the next morning, when my older brother took his two younger sisters down, underneath that tree was a sight that, if you had not believed in delight, joy, the divine, you would. The tree lights were on. The room was dark. And under the tree were two little baby beds, lovingly made by Grandpa Jean. Mother had made the coverlets and the mattress, and Aunt Elise had purchased the dolls that were in those beds. We didn't think of anything else that whole day except the tree and the doll beds. This is a story that still brings tears to my eyes when I think of it and think of all the people who must have been involved helping my mother through those hard times. So I would say the magic of Christmas. My nickname, which everyone knows me by, is Duffy Lore. I do have a real name. It's Marion. And yes, I was a librarian. When I was a child, I did not know that my relatives were of many different faiths. We did not go to church during those war years. My faith traditions are Jewish, Protestant, Catholic, Greek, probably Orthodox, and probably religions that I don't know about because there were so many intermarriages. But I decided to celebrate all of those in my current religion, which is Unitarian Universalism. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
I grew up in Lawrence, Kansas. My parents both had their families in Wichita, Kansas. So every holiday we would drive down, visit both families, and usually spend 4 or 5 days in Wichita. So this particular year, I think I was in college. I think it was my first or second year in college. I was home with my folks for the holidays, and we were getting ready to drive down. We weren't going down until Christmas Day, I believe, and had bad weather. There had been freezing rain and then snow on top of it, and we decided to try it anyway. And since we were going down for several days, you know, we had emptied out the house basically getting ready for this trip. So we get on the road from Lawrence going south to Wichita, and I remember my dad commenting that the roads weren't really that bad. He was surprised at all the cautionary notes about traveling. Well, we got up on a high point, one of those high points in the highway where the wind can really clear things off. And it had blown all the snow off into the side of the road and big, big drifts there. And, of course, because of that, the road had become black ice because there's no snow on there. So something happened. My dad was going a little bit faster than somebody else and had to tap the brakes for some reason. And we instantly just spun around entirely, did a 360, and ended up in the ditch. And the Christmas miracle was that we actually got ourselves out of the ditch without having to get a tow truck. We didn't get buried entirely, and he'd been going slowly enough that we just kind of came to a stop. So that was the huge relief, was that we were able to get the car started again. Between my brother and me and my dad, we were able to kind of push it back up onto the road and got some traction with the tires on the grass underneath the snow. So we made it out, and we unanimously voted that we'd only made it about 10 miles out of town on our, you know, three-hour drive. So we decided that it wasn't worth trying to push it. We'd learned our lesson, turned around and carefully drove back to our house in Lawrence. But because we'd been planning on being gone for 4 or 5 days, I mentioned earlier that we'd sort of cleaned out the house. There was no food in the house. We'd eaten everything out of the refrigerator. No perishables were around. You know, there were just some, I think we had popcorn. That's all we had was popcorn. And it was Christmas Day. None of the stores were open back then. This was back in the 80s. So we got home around noon on Christmas Day. And for the rest of that day, we ate popcorn. And I remember watching It's a Wonderful Life and just sort of hanging around as a family. And then the next day the stores opened and we were able to go out and buy food and have have a proper Christmas dinner the day after Christmas. We were very grateful. We were grateful that our car came out of the ditch and we didn't have to find a tow truck on Christmas. And we were grateful for our popcorn, even though it wasn't really what we were expecting to eat that day. So I think it was a good gratitude day. And the lesson was, of course, you know, to enjoy what you have. It's more important than what you think you should have been getting. I'm David Slade and I'm an Ames resident. And I'd like to wish everybody out there, KHOI listeners, a very, very Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Holidays.
This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and surrounding area. I'm one of your hosts for today's Christmas Recollections, together with my co-host, Susan Franson.
Ursula Rudenberg, KHOI's manager, has joined us. Ursula, you're here to tell us about a new service KHOI has developed, aren't you?
Yes. The radio station is establishing a new department, the KHOI Audio Lab, and I'm excited to come and tell you about it during the show. This new service of KHOI will be an ongoing community learning center, and we'll be providing training in audio production to anyone interested in learning about these arts, whether they want to make radio shows or podcasts or work with audio as pure art.
Great to hear what we can expect in 2018 as far as KHOI's growth goes. All of us here have noticed that the studio upgrades are underway.
Yeah, we recently upgraded our production studios, and thank you for noticing. Evan's been working really hard. This has been possible with the help of a generous donation from an area resident, and we thank them. We have new equipment and furnishings to accommodate the Audio Lab program that we're building, and in January, we are excited to begin training ISU students who want to learn audio production, mostly to make podcasts. This is going to be an 8-week course at KHOI in partnership with the Iowa State Daily newspaper, who has given us a grant to do this during the next semester. And they have already recruited 22 students to be our first round of guinea pigs. We plan to offer KHOI Audio Lab services to any area residents, not just students. And to this end, we have started another program based on a grant from CODA, Ames Commission on the Arts. The program is called Soundscapes, and it's going to be a series of workshops that started in November and will be held once a month at KHOI. Anybody who's interested in audio is invited. You are invited. Workshops cost $5 per workshop, which goes to help cover costs. And you can sign up for the workshop by just calling KHOI at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or it's almost easier just to email us at khoiradio@gmail.com. We'll send you a schedule. We just held our second workshop at the end of December, so there's plenty of time to sign up for January's workshop.
Are these classes for audio professionals or radio people or for the general public?
No experience is needed. These classes are for anyone who wants to try something new and just have some pure enjoyment. The classes are really fun. In my mind, they're pure play, and they focus on audio ecology and sound gathering. So if you have any doubts about how much fun sound can be, Take a listen to what some participant told us at the end of the first workshop in November. They spent a moment in the studio afterwards to record their impressions. At the beginning of the recording, you'll hear Rebecca Reuter, KHOI staff person, who is leading these classes.
I'm Rebecca Reuter. Think about three of your most memorable sounds from your life. Growing up in the Midwest, just the variety of sound that comes from thunderstorms, soft thunderstorms to the most terrifying thunderstorms. And I always thought they sounded like rocks falling from the sky, boulders falling from the sky. When I was growing up, I had this old clock that you'd have to wind up. The sound that that clock makes when you wind it up, it would make this other sound after you wind it up. It was like the sound of the arms shifting and pulling out the little knob and just all those little components. And I don't know, my like young self could almost see and components of the clock based on those noises. My great grandmother smoked a lot, and that was just something about her old voice with the smokes.
My name is Joe Wallace, and a few of the sounds that have resonated with me over the years include the jingle of my dog's collar when she would come down the stairs, because you'd always hear that and a little clip-clomp of her nails on the tile, and it was always just this really joyous sound because she really was happy to see me when I'd get home from school. And I haven't heard that in several years because she's passed on, and it still means a lot to me, and I can just picture it in my head. And another sound that's kind of just burned its way into my consciousness is just this satisfying kind of click and clunk of a guitar chord being plugged into a guitar. It always just excites me because I know I'm plugged in. I can make noise. I can make extremely loud noise. It's kind of on the peripheral of music, which is much more about the sounds itself and consciously making them, but it's just kind of this almost like cost of doing business sound. It's just always going to be there. It's kind of like pressing the play button or something. You know something is coming next. And finally, the sound of snow crunching and the stillness that comes with a snowstorm, and all you hear is the crunch and maybe a little bit of wind through the trees because the snow is just this blanket over everything. It's deadening everything. I think back to when I was a kid going outside at night during a snowstorm and just staring at the sky, how pink it was, how surreal it seemed, and just how serene that moment was. It was just beautiful. And there's when you're walking, there's just that rhythmic crunch, and it's so soft. It's just a really beautiful sound.
My name is Audra. One of my most memorable sounds is the sound of a chickadee. My daughter was not able to speak yet, and she was just a tiny little baby on the changing table, and she heard a chickadee for the first time, and she mimicked it perfectly. And it turns out that she's really musical, so I shouldn't be surprised. And then one of my other most memorable sounds is the sound of a stick shift car. That's how I learned how to drive. I was told to watch the tachometer and thing on the car, but I did it by sound anyway because you could hear the gears.
My name is Henry Zimmerman, and I remember a clock that was given to my mom when we first moved into a house I lived in as a kid. The idea of the clock was that each hour it would play a different songbird's song, and the 1 o'clock hour, so in the afternoon and in the evening, it would play a mourning dove sound, and the clock was not well made, so quickly the mourning dove's pitch dropped, maybe an octave or two, and you'd hear this real low rumbling. And as a kid, you know, the way you would stay up late at night, I would get immensely creeped out hearing this low bird tone come from the kitchen. And beyond all measure, it still haunts me today, this low mourning dove sound. And I don't know if I've heard a mourning dove since, and I don't know if I could tell you what they sound like because I heard that clock so much. When I lived in Ireland over the summer, I took the train a lot. And there's a beautiful thing about passenger trains that I think everyone who's ridden a passenger train can tell you. There's a lulling sound that comes from the tracks below. It's very rhythmic, and maybe in a way it mimics the human heart, but it is certainly capable of putting one to sleep.
Those are the voices of some participants in KHOI Soundscapes Workshop. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, station manager, and thanks, Susan, for giving me a little bit of time. Just wanted to stop by Local Talk and to let you know that you can come to these workshops if you're interested in audio production or just learning more about sound. Just email KHOI at khoiradio@gmail.com and tell us you want us to send you a schedule. We really hope you try it out. I asked Rebecca and some of the participants to tell us a little bit more about the classes so you can understand it better.
The Soundscape Laboratory Workshop is a series of monthly workshops put together to help people appreciate and actively listen to their soundscape. A soundscape being anything from, you know, you and your family at your kitchen table, they can come from your phone or from your backyard, to the sounds of a prairie. They can be big or small. We all have ears, and most of us are hearing abled. Sound has a lot of really interesting things going on, and so let's sit down and think about these things. My hope is that people who come to the workshop will find a new appreciation for listening to sounds that they may not otherwise appreciate. You know, as the speed that technology is increasing, we're plugged in constantly in our headphones, and you might say that we listen to our headphones on the bus in order to avoid listening to the bus. But maybe through this workshop, you may take a day or a week and take out those earbuds and actually hear what's going on your bus.
What kind of things will people do in the workshop?
In the first workshop, we created sound maps. We learned how to visualize sound, which sounds kind of funny, but it can be done. Later on, we'll take each category of sound, so man-made sounds, biologically made sounds, and elemental sounds, and learn more about those in a more detailed way. We'll do some recordings based off of the workshop, so everyone has a sort of assignment. And your assignment will be to go out, make some sound maps, make some recordings based off of what you learned at the workshop.
The workshop's available for pretty much anyone in terms of audio experience. Whether you're a seasoned musician, you have a lot of recording experience. If you are familiar with radio or audio production in another sense, or if you've got no experience at all, I think it's going to show you from a ground-up perspective how sound operates. And along the way, you might learn how best to record something or how best to communicate a thought. And those are all tertiary things to what the workshop is trying to get out. But I think you can't help but learn stuff like that when you're doing it.
What brought you here?
Well, I'm a fan of community radio. I myself do some stuff over at KURE as a student. And I like the idea of increasing my skill set. So I'm pretty excited moving forward.
There's a lot of different sounds. And even if you're not taking this workshop, you could take out a piece of paper and a pen and take a moment and write down everything that you hear.
That's KHOI's staff person, Rebecca Reuter, who is teaching KHOI's new monthly soundscape classes. The radio station has established a new department, the KHOI Audio Lab. This new service of KHOI will be an ongoing community learning center that provides training in audio production to anyone interested in learning about these arts, whether they want to make radio shows or podcasts or work with audio as art. You, of course, are invited to join the monthly soundscape classes. Just email khoiradio@gmail.com to get the class schedule.
This is Ursula Rudenberg, KHOI's manager, inviting you to join the classes. And before we go, let me share with you some of the environmental sounds that were gathered so far by the classes. Rebecca Reuter, our staff person, put this together to play on the air at KHOI, so enjoy. These are the sounds of our community. These are some of the sounds of our community.
Mind if I record you? Welcome to the KHOI Soundscape Laboratory, an 8-month workshop where we explore and appreciate the soundscapes of Ames, Iowa. Every week, you will hear a collection of recordings brought to you by workshop participants and staff of KHOI Community Radio. You'll hear sounds from the anthropological, biological, and geographical sound categories. This episode of Soundscape Laboratory serves as a sort of introduction to the workshop. We'll travel through Ames via the Skunk River. On our way, we'll see the rush on Duff Avenue, say good day to the Campanile, stop briefly to wave at the train conductor,
and greet those hard workers at the Resource Recovery Plant. And now, your auditory adventure.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this first installment of the KHOI Soundscape Laboratory. We traveled through Ames via the Skunk River. On our way, we saw the rush of Duff Avenue, said good day to the Campanile, stopped briefly to wave at the train conductor, and greeted those hard workers at the Resource Recovery Plant. If you want to sign up and participate in these workshops, email us at khoiradio@gmail.com or stop by the station at 410 Douglas Avenue in magical downtown Ames. For details on upcoming workshops, check out the events tab of the KHOI Facebook page. Each workshop is only $5 and will go towards our operating expenses. The theme of the next workshop is Biophony Sounds, or the sounds created by non-human animals. Production assistance came from Aaron O'Neill, Ursula Rudenberg, and myself, Rebecca Reuter. KHOI is a nonprofit community radio station that relies on donations from the Central Iowa community. Consider donating or becoming a member today. Go to khoifm.org for more information. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest updates on your community radio station. Your auditory adventure has come to a brief end. Join us next month on Soundscape Laboratory.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Susan Franzen and
Paul Wearson.
You heard from KHOI staff Ursula Rudenberg and Rebecca Reuter, and Soundscape workshop participants Joe Wallace, Henry Zimmerman, and Audra. Other voices you heard were Paul Nelson, Roger Berger, Cynthia McClure, Paul Hertz, Rick Morrison, Merrill Hodge, David Slade, and Duffy Lohr.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all our show postings in your news feed.
Local Talk was engineered by Ursula Rudenberg. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button and push it.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening and
see you again on the radio.